The Grade 3 Conference, Lecture 2. Although the term guardian angel may seem quaint and old-fashioned to us, even those of us who are working hard with anthroposophy, it was not that long ago that this was something that people passionately believed in. In fact, I would say a belief in this being only came to an end, only had its real death knell, the final nail in the coffin of this belief, in the year 1982, when the scientific term immune system was developed. Many of you may think immune system is a fairly old scientific term because you've heard it for a good deal of your life, but it's actually that recent, 1982. So this, I would say, is essentially the same thing as the guardian angel. And the guardian angel is for a normal, reasonably healthy child. The guardian angel is the same thing as the etheric body. So you see this chain of ideas that in the previous segment I spoke of the etheric body as the life body, as that which gives us life at birth, that maintains our life as we grow, and finally ends our life with its withdrawal. This is also the way in which our guardian angel relates to us. So in the case of a child, and I would say this is certainly true in the case of healthy primary school children, the etheric body should be virtually completely occupied by the child's guardian angel. It provides a place of residence for that guardian angel who has no physical body of his own, no relationship to a physical body, does not need one, but does need an etheric body in which to manifest in any way on the earth. Where that angelic being does not find a welcome, finds that the etheric forces cannot sustain an angelic presence, or at least not a complete angelic presence, so that only part of the angel can manifest and the rest is outside of the child, there we start to see issues with the child's health, or we start to see issues with the child's behavior. We begin to see issues with the child's learning. And I don't think that I have to lecture you on the subject. We all know that with every new year, one hears more and more, oh, this first grade has the neediest children I've ever seen, or, oh, the needs in this class. This group of first graders, they're going to need a teacher who can meet their needs. And all of this, not to say that it's not a whole lot of other things as well, but the vital nerve of this neediness is the child needs his or her angel, and the angel cannot be fully present. Well, we may not be able to work directly with that angel, but as we will see, and that's a major theme that will weave through many of the lectures in this conference, we will see how we can be helping the child's etheric forces, how we can provide something of a foundation for them to flourish, which will in turn draw the child's angel back, and that will sustain that child in a way that perhaps was not possible when the child was younger. So we really are about working with the child's guardian angel. And I don't think it's insignificant that third grade is the last time that the curriculum itself leads us to speak about angels to the children. Now we have, you know, very direct descriptions of angelic beings in one way or another, not all the time, but certainly in some of the earlier passages in the Hebrew scriptures. So the angel is brought to the child's consciousness, and we have to be sure that it is in our consciousness as well. So that's yet another aspect of the child's etheric body. And I would say that of all of the great initiates, of all of the great teachers of spiritual life, Rudolf Steiner was unique in separating the etheric body from other bodies, from other force systems, from the complexity in which it was woven. He was able to tease this etheric body out and perceive it, and then to us present it in a very clear way. And this is really the key to Steiner's great contribution to modern culture, that he was an individual who was able to guide us to the central importance of the etheric body and the etheric world to our times. And we might say that third grade is the quintessential approach to the etheric body, that this is the year in which we really have to try to penetrate it, to understand it, to really understand its workings in ourselves as well. We'll be coming back to this theme more than once. Now let's go a little bit further to the next member of the human being, the astral body. Now, I said earlier in the first segment, we are born as a physical etheric being. Well, I was being a little bit simplifying there, because the astral body is also certainly present, but very little of it, perhaps 5%, is incorporated in the newborn. The rest is outside. Where? It's much larger than the etheric body. It's actually spread out all the way to, once again, don't think of just the planet in space, but the entire orbit and its distance from the Earth, millions and millions of miles away from the Earth in the orbit of Saturn, the very end of the classical old solar system, which in those days was actually a geocentric system. But nonetheless, if we think of that, how many millions of miles away, hundreds of millions of miles away, is Saturn from the Earth? The astral body is spread out that far. It incorporates the entire realm of the classical planets within it. And it, too, is contracting. It takes about twice as long as the etheric body to make its way to incorporate within the physical body. But it has a much, much greater distance to go, which means it is moving faster, much faster than the etheric body. When something is moving at a greater speed, we could say it generates more heat. When something is moving at a greater speed, it certainly develops more momentum. It hits with more of a bang. You know, it depends on how quickly a baseball player gets that bat to move and how fast that ball is heading towards the bat, whether one is just going to have a foul tip or a home run. So the astral body is moving at great speed. We could say it's probably something like the relationship of the speed of sound. That would be the etheric body's rate, and the speed of light. That would be the astral body's speed, 186,000 miles a second. It's moving very, very rapidly towards the child, but nonetheless still takes about 12, 14 years to be incorporated. But unlike the etheric body, which incorporates quite fully, almost 100%, still needs to have part of its nature streaming out of the back of our head into the etheric world, the astral body does not incorporate more than 50% of itself within us. Where's the other 50%? It's in those around us. The astral body, which is also essentially synonymous with the soul, Steiner spoke of it at times as the soul body, this really brings these forces of soul, which suddenly appear, even explode, we might say, in times of great turmoil and tumultuousness in the child's life, with the coming of puberty and adolescence. And as any teacher knows, even if you haven't taught that age yet, you see it around you in your school, how critical then the social relationships of a young person are when that astral body comes, how it awakens the child to everybody around him. They're all looking at me. Do I look all right? Do I look weird to everybody? Why isn't anybody talking to me? Everybody likes me. I'm popular. Nobody likes me, and so on. It's all about the world around one, especially the human world around one. This is very much the nature of the astral body. We could say that where the etheric meets the astral, we begin to have the capacity for thinking. Memory moves into thinking. And this is why the astral body comes, so that we can take yet another step in our consciousness. So the astral body has an incredibly important role. It is, we might say, the progenitor of the intellect, of intellectual capacities within the human being. And once again, you see how slowly we work compared to mainstream education. We're saying that intellectual forces don't really arise until seventh or eighth grade. That's astonishing. Very, very different from mainstream schools where children are being asked to do critical thinking in kindergarten. We spoke about how destructive this can be to the etheric forces. It can be equally destructive to the astral forces. Etheric forces, we might say, when they have an inhospitable relationship to school, they will go away. They will be driven out, and the child will have its health suffer. Astral forces, when one is trying to stimulate intellectuality at too early an age, astral forces, which are always quite opposite the etheric, they are lured in, they're drawn into this, and they take on their role, which is very different from that of the etheric forces. So we see now these two bodies becoming related to each other. And in the next segment, we'll see just what it is that the astral body and the etheric body do in conjunction with one another. How these polar opposites attract, but each have their own very important task to perform, and how it's up to us as teachers to try to bring a degree of harmony to them. That will come next.